I've appreciated the thoughts that were brought forth this morning already, and as I was looking at our program and see the name Christian School Administration Institute, I could hardly believe that this is the seventh event like this already. It seems the years do go by, and I trust that this event can be a source of inspiration to the various churches represented here. The next topic that we have before us, and I think there's a mistake here. The word disabilities there should in fact be disorders. We're looking at disorders, finding the balance. Brother Robert Heedwell will come forward and share the topic with us. Then after the topic, I'll come forward again and share further. Brother Robert.
Greetings in Jesus' name this morning. It's a pleasure to be together in the interest of the work of the kingdom. Disorders, finding the balance. We always tremble a little bit at trying to find a balance. How can one man decide what the balance is? Well, we all need each other, and we also need God's Word. God's Word helps us to find balances in life. So we're going to start with Bible principles. The first one I have here is one blood. The Bible says, He hath made of one blood all nations of men. That includes not just the nations, but every person. Another Bible principle, I don't have a whiteboard here, pardon me, or I would write on it in capital letters, A-D-A-M. What does that say? Adam. That's right. We all have a healthy dose of Adam in us. In other words, we're all on level ground in that respect. Another Bible principle is what we might call the thorn or a thorn in the flesh. One of my mentors, a teacher of many years, I used to look at him and think that he knew it all. I knew better, but he kind of had it made. He was a wise man, a wise teacher, a good teacher. But as I learned to know him better, I realized that he, with me and the rest of us, had things that he found difficult. He had his thorn in the flesh, too. There were basic school subjects that he struggled with, even though he taught for many years. And so we all struggle with something. We're thinking about disorders here. We all struggle with something. I saw a bumper sticker one time that said, "We're all dysfunctional. Get over it." Maybe not all true, but maybe not all wrong either. Let's look at history for just a little bit. And here again, I don't have answers. But is it true that we hear more about disorders today than we did years ago? What might be the reasons? I don't know. Some people would say it's because of higher toxicity levels around us. Maybe. Or because of, sometimes at least, hopefully not often, it might be because of drugs. Or possibly because of diet, changes in diet from what we once had. They should be better, shouldn't they? Lots of sugars, artificial flavors, colorings, and so on. I'm not planning to say much about this, lest I be like the man who came back from somewhere he had never been. But at the very least, parents, don't send your bouncing Bradley to school with a lunchbox full of chocolate bars. There are some things we have to reckon with that work and some things that don't work. And as boards, we might sometimes get a little involved with that, even though we don't like it. We also need to ask ourselves, do we sense more of this type of thing because we are expecting more of our students than we used to? You know, curriculum changes, curriculum improves, And so our students should get better with it, shouldn't they? Senior teachers or teachers of many years know what that's like. We have to keep telling ourselves that a grade six doesn't know any more about this English lesson or this math lesson than what the grade six boy did 20 years ago, even though I know it better. And so as things change, are we asking more of our students than we once did and wonder why we have so many disorders? I'm just asking those questions. I'm not giving you answers. And possibly there's less writing available. There was less writing available on the subject 100 years ago than what there is today. There might have been as many problems back then, a little like cancer. So many more cancer cases today. Yes or no? True or false? Many, many people died in yesteryear of consumption. What was consumption? Find a doctor to tell you what it was. Maybe it was cancer. We'll leave that. Another point in history, what did our great-grandfathers do about disorders? Well, they probably turned to James chapter 5, like we're going to do right now. I'm sorry, James chapter 1, verse 5 is what I wanted to say. So we'll just turn to in our Bibles to James chapter 1, verse 5. And it says what you know that it says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. What a promise. That's a promise. Have you ever wondered why it says, if any of you lack wisdom, as though maybe we wouldn't? I think it maybe says that to make sure that we think about it, that we get ready here first and recognize that we do lack wisdom. Well, our great-grandfathers, they probably read that verse. Then they probably talked to their brethren. That's what we're doing right now at this meeting. And then they probably prayed for wisdom. And then I suppose they did the best they knew with the resources they had, just like we're going to do today. Remember this, that increased knowledge only helps if it helps. Think about that. Some people thrive on knowing about all the troubles in the world and the difficulties and the disasters on the news and everything else. Does it help? If it doesn't help, if I can do nothing about it. One brother came back one time from a trip. He was in the Lord's work, and he said he told the Lord that he doesn't want to know anymore about all the troubles and famine in the world unless he can do something about it. And I admired him for that attitude. Or like my journey with dyslexia, trying to understand dyslexia better so I could help my students. I have a book at home that has 4 pages of symptoms for dyslexia with no solutions. Does it help? Yes, it can, because we at least know what we're talking about. But what we're trying to say is that we can become so knowledgeable and not be any closer to a solution. All right, let's talk about two extreme positions. We're talking about a balance here today. What are two extreme positions, I meant to say. Sorry, two extreme positions. One position is using a diagnosis as an excuse for poor character. Sometimes in talking to parents or teachers, one gets the feeling that we're sort of glad that Samuel has a disorder. That way, there is something on which we can blame his poor conduct. You know, it's a little bit like when babies get teeth. Aren't you glad babies get teeth? Oh, that's why he's so fussy tonight, because he's getting teeth. It's kind of nice, isn't it? We sort of like excuses. We're all human enough to like excuses. We just said a while ago that we all have plenty of Adam in us. Isn't that what he did? That's what he did. He made an excuse. The woman, he said, that. So on. He passed the buck, and we're apt to do the same. And you know what happens? Let's go back to the baby teeth again. You know what happens to the baby teeth? I don't have to tell you what happens. After a while, they fall out. And then we put them in a little pill bottle. At least that's what I do. I put them in a little pill bottle in my science shelves in the classroom, and then I teach science. I have science experiments with little
discarded baby teeth. Isn't that a picture of so many disorders? We watch that child grow up, and he actually does fairly well in life. And we kind of forget all about the disorder. Now, don't jump to conclusions here before we're done. Here's another. We talked about two opposite positions. The other position is making believe that there are no disorders. Well, we'll just say there aren't any then. And sometimes when there is no easy solution, we switch to denial mode. And we say, well, there are none. He doesn't have a problem. We'll just pretend that there are no disorders. We'll just pretend that we are all pattern cut from the same block. That would probably be as reasonable as saying that we all have the same hair color, all have the same shape of ear, we all have the same eye color, etc., etc. We're the same in everything. Aren't you glad we're not? Well, then probably there might be some differences in our mental abilities, how we process things, so on. And so, in reviewing these two extreme positions before we move on, what are we really trying to say? What shall we say about normality? Or is there no such a thing as normality? I saw this book one time, and I just had to buy it. Don't buy the book. It won't help you very much. But I couldn't resist the title. Now, you're all wishing you'd be sitting at the front. I wish, too, you would be. You are. But is it normal? Did you see that the first time you looked at it? Is normal normal? I didn't see it the first time I looked at it.
The R is upside down.
The R is upside down. That's right. Well, isn't that shocking? So he still made a paradox of the whole thing. But is there normality? That's the question. Are there normal people? Or doesn't it matter how we think about that? I think it does. Let's think about that just a wee bit more before we move on. A world with no normal fits well with a humanistic concept of no absolutes. If there's no normal, then what? In such a world, there is no accountability, and therefore it doesn't matter how I live. In a world where everyone is normal, that promotes the concept that everyone should be able to do as I can do. At least if I'm one of the normal ones. I don't need patience with anybody. I think there is such a thing as normality. And there is such a thing as disorders. I think there is. But we just have to be cautious in how we relate to it. That's where the balance comes in. Question, how many disorders are there? Over 6,000, I'm told. I don't have a list of them. It would be long. It would, on lined paper, two columns, it would take 100 sides to list all the disorders. There are even personality disorders. I think maybe that's what's wrong with me. In other words, about one in every 200 births. So if you were hoping that I would stand here and address each disorder in turn, you will be greatly disappointed because I have neither the knowledge nor the time. In fact, I'll try to be fair and not lift up one disorder above another. I won't be talking about one in particular very much, except where I might need to make comparisons, illustrations. One more thing. One wise man said he thinks that the ones that are almost normal are the ones that are most misused. And I think he's right. You know, when a child enters our lives, our schools, our circle of relationship that is very limited, very handicapped, something in us has compassion. And we respect We accept. But what about the child that's almost normal, and we hardly think of it, and yet there's something lacking, and we know it? And then we come up with terms. You've heard them. I hesitate to use them. And maybe the, well, y'all leave that with you. Can we be respectful? There was a boy that went to school like that, a boy like that, that went to school when I was a student, and I look back on those days with regrets because of how we sometimes treated him. Let's move on. How can we help? Acceptance of each child as God made him will go a long way in finding this delicate balance. Now, that word acceptance has been blown out of proportion in our modern day, and I'm not talking about that, the modern view of acceptance, where we basically can accept everybody into the church, too. Why not? What's all the fuss about? No, that's not the kind of acceptance we're talking about. But acceptance as God sees it. Acceptance of his ability or lack of it. Roses do have thorns, but thorns have roses. Which way shall we view it? He does poorly in math, or he does strongly in cheerfulness. Which is it? Which one is a disorder? We choose how we think of it. Does a vulture, a turkey vulture, have a head feather deficit disorder? Or does he have a beauty all its own? Take your pick. Our boys talk so disdainfully about magpies. Maybe I shouldn't use the word disdainfully. That's a pretty strong word. So they don't like magpies. They get rid of them. I said, if you'd have never seen a magpie and you'd see one in a zoo, you'd say with admiration, my, what a long, beautiful tail that thing has. See the difference? Is it a beauty all its own? I think this is important. And so what are we talking about? Well, maybe I should give some illustrations. So, we have a poor speller in school. School boards hear about it. And so we do everything to make that student spell. We talk to other teachers. We read all the books about spelling. We study up on brain disorders. We lose sleep. Pardon me. And we even pull our hair. But he still can't spell. But maybe worse than that, we tend to build this mountainous barrier between student and teacher out of spelling. Now you say, you've taught school all these years, you don't care about spelling? I care about spelling just as much as all the rest of you. But we have to be careful that we don't build walls where we should be building bridges. Let me keep going. Don't you think he knows how desperately the teacher wants him to spell and how impossible it is for him to spell? So what have you built? Something for him to attain to that he can't attain to. I'd call that a barrier. Maybe it's a little bit like my colorblindness. I'm not seriously colorblind, but I am partially colorblind. And I remember, you know, in the World Book Encyclopedia, they have those tests for colorblindness. And so I was at one of my students' desk one time in art class, and he said, he knew I was partly colorblind. He said, can't you see that shape, whatever it was, square, triangle? Well, I said, in this one I can, but not in this one. He said, you can't see it in there. No, I said, I can't see anything in there. I'm going to teach you, he said. Sure, go ahead. And one day, a few years later, he found a wife, and she was moving into our community. And so at the welcome for her, I went up to the front, and we talked about a few things. And I told him, I said, I'm ready to start classes anytime on colorblindness. But for some reason, we never started. Now, maybe you say that's a poor comparison, colorblindness to poor spelling. Maybe it is, but it's still a fact. It's there. I don't know of any way to fix my colorblindness, and he doesn't know of any way to fix his spelling. I want to be careful. There are students that can't spell because they're lazy. And there are students that with a little help can learn how to spell. But I've taught enough students that were dyslexic enough that one girl told me one time, she said, the harder I study, the worse grade I get. And I told her, I believe it. Because it can work that way. So stop building walls. Well, we're not quite done yet. You know what Ecclesiastes 1:15 says? I like these verses. There are a couple of verses close together there. Ecclesiastes 1:15, that which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. God makes some things straight, and he makes some things crooked, and it's all beautiful. Some things about us are the way God made us, and both the teacher and the student and the board need to accept that fact. Maybe a few more examples yet. I'll never forget the day when I had a struggling student. He struggled in a lot of things, and it was about 10:20 in the morning. Recess was 10 minutes away. Math class was winding down. He raised his hand. I was sitting at my desk then, and I looked at him and said his name, and he started asking me about this problem, and I just looked at him and I said, just put your math book away and go get a library book. What I'll never forget is there's a little girl right over there that had been reading her library book for who knows how long already. It was done with math. She looked at me, and then she looked at him, and then she smiled. She understood. Why can't he have a chance, too, to read a library book? Why does life have to treat him so hard just because he has a tough time in math? I told a student one day that God has a different grade book than what I do. And I've had students over the years, back to spelling again, different ones that I've said, well, you try 10 words instead of 20. And so they did. Sometimes that's what it took. Sometimes I said, try 5 words. You just take these 5 words. Try that. And sometimes that was what it took. You may as well learn how to spell 5 words. And there was one or two students that I completely removed from spelling. I simply finally said, you don't have to do spelling. Listen, if you were a mechanic that rebuilt engines and 1 in 20 ran when you were done, what would you do? I know what you'd do. You'd quit. You'd find a different job. Now, I'm not talking to boards here this morning so you can go home and tell your teachers, oh, just give up on spelling. It doesn't really matter. That's not the point at all. But the point is that God made some things straight and he made some things crooked, and we do well to leave it that way. And so if God made him, he doesn't have the ability to spell, he needs to know that you love him just as much. And it doesn't really matter. It matters, and yet it doesn't matter. In our relationship, it doesn't matter. Remember, help your teachers to teach with all their might. I love enthusiastic teaching, but in the back of their minds, we have to remember that students have limits. When the gas pedal is all the way to the floor, all you get for pushing harder is either a sore leg or a hole in the floor or both of the above. Put yourself into that student's place. He's done it. He's done his best. The pedal is down. Make sure he knows that you appreciate that, and that's good enough. Let's talk a little more about balance. You hoped that I would paint some bright yellow marks down the middle of every disorderly road. We'll try to keep painting as we draw some conclusions to this talk, but I cannot clarify every gray area. I live in the north, and sometimes in our little gravel roads there, we get a lot of snow in the winter. The banks get higher and higher and higher, 4 feet, 6 feet, 8 feet, depending where it is. And after a while, we look at each other sometimes and say, we can't hit the ditch anymore. We can only hit the bank. And it's literally true. I Avoiding the ditches to stay on the road is probably not the best driving policy, but sometimes during or just after a heavy storm, avoiding the ditches is about the only way to stay on the road. You can just barely tell. Nobody else has driven it before. You probably don't know what that's like down here. I could say more, but our lonely roads up there, that is that way sometimes. That's why we keep talking about avoiding extremes. So, sometimes we get all bogged down in the disorder, all the names. And again, I want to be understood, I'm not opposed to attaching names to things, certain things. We talked about that already, but don't get bogged down in it. And forget to look at the basics. So can Samuel hear well? Have you tested him? Can he see well, or does he need glasses? We had one of our children needed glasses before he went to school. And somebody asked one time, how'd you know that? Well, I won't go into all that, but parents can be observant. But as boards, we can be asking those questions. Are we sure we've covered the basics? The simple things. Overdiagnosing can also blur reality. So we diagnose and diagnose, but the fact is that you're going to have to work with that child, no matter who he is, what he is. If he's a dyslexic, if he's an ADHD, or whatever he is, you're going to have to work with him anyhow. And so, come back from your journey, your diagnostic journey, and face reality. We're going to have to work with this child. You remember the pessimist, the optimist, and the realist that were all in the boat in the sea? They were on the sea and the storm was on. The pessimist said, the wind blows from the wrong direction. The optimist said, the wind will soon change direction. And the realist said, let's change the set of the sail. Let's go at this a different way. However, on the other side of the road is the other ditch that acting blind to a child's difficulties can also blur the yellow lines. Compassion and understanding are a part of Christian virtue. And so sometimes giving a struggling child more space will help him lessen the amount of work he needs to do. If a child struggles with reading, more reading might help, but it also might discourage him and lower his morale. And once you've given him the mentality of I quit, then you have a problem. It'd be way better to have him do less and not get that feeling of disaster. Then he'll keep trying. And again, we work with those situations. So, break it down. Reduce the load. We talked about that already with spelling, but other subjects too. Evens and odds are even less than that. Being more visual with direction can sometimes help with a child that struggles with logic. I must go caught willingly. If he'd write that out 5 times or 20 times, depending on his ability. Or using a dial for helping children with behavior problems like an ADHD. That's talked about in the book, The Gift of Dyslexia, if you want access to that. But the dial is simply a visible way to rate energy level. And it works, especially for children that struggle with that. You know, I remember when we were teaching little boys, we'd tell them to calm down or be quiet. And they soon learn what that means. But some children need a more picturesque way to get a hold of that. Calm down from what to what is what an ADHD child would be saying in his mind. What's the position? And so the dial is simply an imaginary spinner, 1, 2, 3, 4 to 10. And so you teach him that, you know, when he's at 1, he's sleeping. When he's at 2, he's blinking his eyes. And, and then he's eating breakfast, he's at 4, and he's playing at school, he's at 6, and he's running the race, he's at 7, and 8, he's winning the race, and so on. You teach him what's going on. I will never forget when a teacher taught a very hyperactive child the dial when he was in the younger grades. Later, he was in grade 6 in my room, and we were having a bit of a class project where they were working together around the room here and there. He was teamed up with another boy, and he was getting a little loud at the back of the room. I don't remember how I got his attention, but somehow I made him look at me, and I just held up 3 fingers. I had never talked to him once about the dial. He knew nothing about my knowledge of it. But I held up 3 fingers, and you could watch his energy level just go like this. He knew what to do. I'd have said, calm down. Again, you mean calm down from the haymow or from the church service, or what are you talking about? But, and now don't go home and think you have to teach all your children to dial. Our boys learn to calm down without it. But sometimes that visual picture is all they need, a child that struggles with logic. Be patient. Change can be very disturbing to some children. Be firm but understanding. Well, there are six concluding yellow lines that I'd like to mention here. Some negatives and some positives. Three bewares first. The first one is beware of psychiatry. Now you say, why is that? Well, as boards again, we sometimes are confronted with questions. What shall we do? Shall we take this child and get him tested? What shall we do? Beware of psychiatry. Now, not everything that psychiatry says is all wrong, but it starts on the wrong premise. It bypasses God and builds on humanistic viewpoints and modern philosophy. Let's say it this way. Catch this. It starts with the mind and moves toward the principle. That's psychiatry. Instead of starting with the principle and applying the mind to it, is there a difference? There is. Psychiatry starts with the mind and moves toward principle. We must start with principle and apply the mind to it. So beware of psychiatry. Beware of counseling. Now, the Bible speaks favorably about counseling, but there is a modern or recent emphasis that is unsound. And I would ask a few questions. I'd like to read you a story, but I probably won't have time. When counsel can only come from a few select people who are widely known as counselors, then beware. When local boards and church leaders don't have what it takes, then beware. Now, we're not saying we never reach out. The phone rings. What would you do? That's okay. But it's the concept that these folks at home just don't have it. When counsel says much about why we are here and little about where we go from here, then beware. I would say again, I reiterate in positive note, that good counsel says very little about why we are here and much more about where we will go tomorrow. That's what this story illustrates. You know it, advertising for a thief. How many know that story? About that thief that brought those hides back. And he wept in the corner. He was at the end of the road. And if grandfather would have said, was your dad a drunkard like that too? Did he have trouble like that? We have bitter pride in our hearts. And it doesn't take much to stir up that bitter pride. Grandfather just said, that was your first theft, and it'll be your last. Come tomorrow morning, and I'll employ you at good wages. And he changed the man. That's good counsel. And you know when we're the best counselors? When we don't know we're counseling. You counsel every day at home. Trust me. And you do too. Now, did I say that all other counseling is wrong? I didn't say that. I just said what I said. Beware. One wife counseled her husband one day. You know this story better than I, maybe. Bishop in the church was facing depression. And he didn't want to go out to the barn to do his chores in the morning, over to the chicken barn. His wife asked him, why not? And he said, well, he might die in the chicken house. And his wife said, and what would be wrong with dying in the chicken house? What wonderful counsel. Beware of professionalism. First of all, consider the difference between excellence and professionalism. Here's the difference. Professionalism lifts up the man and his position. Excellence promotes godliness and proper conduct. And we need to be careful with that, because there are so many books out there that are written by professionals. And it's not wrong sometimes to glean a few bits and pieces, but we need to be careful. Have you ever noticed that when the professional stops to catch his breath on the top of the mountain, that he discovers the man of faith walking humbly to meet him? He was there before. Even many books about subjects such as we are discussing today, the books are written by professionals, when the dust all settles at the end of the book, when the conclusions are all made, there isn't a lot that scriptural principles and common sense couldn't have found. So beware of professionalism. Another point is discern aptitude versus attitude. That's a tough one. Easy to say, hard to do. But discern aptitude versus attitude. In other words, don't jump too fast. Keep watching his performance. How does he do in his best days? How does he do in his worst days? And children like this often have very pronounced best and worst. All people have some of them. But they are very pronounced sometimes in children like this, with disorders. Don't jump to conclusions too fast. I remember when one of our sons was quite young, he had some hearing trouble. Sometimes he'd get a cold and it'd settle in his ears, get ear infection. And I sometimes just didn't know if this boy hears me or not. One time I told him to pick up the toys, and there was no response. And so I just said in the same tone of voice, same volume, I said, "Do you want a candy?" And there was still no response. Well, then I knew where I was. The next point is submit. Maybe this is the hardest one. You know, in dealing with disorders and learning disabilities, so many times one or more person in the triangle, the teacher-parent-board triangle, is quite confident that he or she knows what is wrong, knows what should be done, and knows how the other sectors in the triangle are missing it. It might be a board member that's a little forward. It might be the boy's mother that is pretty sure she understands him the best. It doesn't matter who it is, but sometimes there's one in that triangle that's quite confident. Then, if there is not submission and working together, a few things happen. The sure one tends to go off on his own tangent and become lopsided. But the child is not helped because the focus shifts to relationships instead of the problem that he needs to be helped with. That's always sad when that happens. Remember that the child will benefit more from the submissive working together of godly, imperfect people who are using imperfect methods than he will from quarreling superiors, no matter how perfect their methods are. Maybe I should say that again. Remember that the child will benefit more from the submissive working together of godly, imperfect people who are using imperfect methods than he will from quarreling superiors, no matter how perfect their methods. As I already mentioned, remember that children like this thrive on pattern and structure. They need a lot of support around them. Again, I could tell you a story of a boy that kind of went to pieces in Walmart, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. A child we were trying to help some, and I discovered that he had money in his pocket. He had come into our home, and we had a talk on the way home from town that day, and I said, told him, he handed his money to me, I handed it back, and I said, "That money goes to your dresser drawer, and if I ever find it not there, then I'll keep it for you." The next time we had him in Walmart, he was an absolutely different boy. That boy needed structure in his life. He had $100 in his wallet that day. First thing he asked me, or not first thing, but soon after, went into the store, he asked me where the MP3 players were. I put my hand on his shoulder and said, "You don't need MP3 players." But I couldn't figure out. Well, I hope you can understand. I hope you haven't been there. I hope your children don't take $100 to town with them and not know whether they may spend it or not or how that works. That's dad's job to superintend that. But to me, it was an illustration of how a child needs that structure. It's not fair to them to give them that kind of privileges. Well, the last point here is the glory of the struggle. God has not promised simple solutions. Does he like to see us struggle, or does he like to see us on our knees? Which is it? God has made promises. He said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. He said, I will be with thee. He said, wisdom shall be given thee. God has not provided. God has not provided for downloads. Why hasn't he? Or did he? What do fathers do when they teach their sons? What do school boards do when they help their teachers? Once again, I come back to that same principle. Does God like to see us struggle, or does he like to see us on our knees? Does he like to see us reaching out in dependence for what we don't have? Our time has been used. How do we find the balance? How do we do all this? I don't know. But I do know that when I was a young man and I was asked to teach school and I had consented to teach, I went before the school year was over to the school where I was planning to teach school that coming year for the first time. And I told the principal there who had been there for a number of years, I said that I'm looking forward to his wisdom in the classroom. And he said, I don't have any. But when I need more, I know where to go. Lord bless you.